We have our first reports of a team meeting with Juan Soto, and in this case, it'll be the New York Mets next week. Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday, November 8th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau, Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H, on the Twitter machine. And Christian, we're going to get to the St. Louis Cardinals seemingly tearing it down. We're going to get to top free agents possibly having, possibly changing positions this offseason. We're going to get to, you know, gold gloves and things like that. But first, we had a report came out yesterday that the New York Mets have scheduled a meeting next week in Southern California with Juan Soto and Scott Boras. Mets owner Steve Cohen and some other front office folks will be traveling. This is the first reported or confirmed meeting between a team and the top free agent this year and one of the top free agents of, I'm going to say, the last 20 years. And obviously, while Steve Cohen's out there in Southern California, there's a bunch of other Boras clients he could visit and talk about. Corbin Burnes, Blake Snell, Alex Bregman, things like that. But is this, are the Mets the favorites to sign Juan Soto because of Steve Cohen's financial might? Or because he just spent a season with the Yankees, they should still be the favorites until proven otherwise?
Well, it doesn't seem like Soto really cares the fact that he was with the Yankees last season. Now, I know that he really enjoyed his time there. He said that multiple times while he was there. But it sounds like he's after the bag, Lindsey. He's absolutely after getting paid. I don't think it's going to have a lot of deferrals like Ohtani as well. So I'd have to say that Cohen and the Mets are a front runner. If you look at what they've done in the past, what you've seen from when they just 2 years ago, when they went out and got Verlander, when they got Scherzer, when they extended Lindor. I mean, there was a lot of big things that Cohen did right off the bat since Cohen has taken over as the Mets owner. And I'm not surprised if the Mets are the front runner. I will say this though, you know, the winter meetings are a month away from today. And this is just a start of something with Juan. So this is nothing that is going to be just because the Mets are getting the first lick at it doesn't mean that they are going to be the only ones doing so. There are going to be lots of meetings before December 8th. This just to me shows that it's going to be a long contending bid for this guy. But I wouldn't be surprised if they're trying to get it done so a big deal can break in Dallas during the winter meetings. So I think that's why they're getting a quick start at Juan Soto.
Yeah, and this is, we talked about this a little bit yesterday with me and Troy, but this is a really interesting pursuit here because from the outside, it doesn't feel like any team that signs Juan Soto can really make a lot of other significant adds in free agency. We talked about the report that supposedly the Mets think they can sign both Soto and Pete Alonso and still have room to add some pitching. And David Stearns, you know, vice president of baseball operations, all these titles are so odd. He's the GM, right? On Monday in San Antonio at the GM meetings, he said that they're looking for multiple starters. Like, you can build pitching staffs in a lot of different ways. And he kind of explained that they can, you know, they have options for the bullpen. You know, do they go with more multi-inning guys and things like that? But they have to find innings because two-thirds of the innings from the 2024 pitching staff, it's more than 800 innings, were either players that are free agents, players that are now in other organizations, or going to miss the season due to injury. So if the Mets sign Juan Soto, obviously that makes them a threat to repeat a playoff push like they did in 2024. But can they build a complete roster if they end up paying $600 million, $500 million, whatever it might be, for a Juan Soto?
Yeah, when you look at the teams that are interested in Soto, most of them are contenders with the exception of the Tampa Bay Rays, who are looking to get back into contention.
I love the Tampa Bay Rays calling to check in on Juan Soto. They made an offer to Freddie Freeman, too. Like,
exactly.
It's probably a shorter-term thing, but like, I love the fact that they're like, yeah, no, we're going to call, too. We're going to check in. It would be his salary be more than our entire roster, but we're going to call anyway, just to check. I love it.
With all those teams being contenders though, you have to feel like that they want to get this Soto deal done as soon as possible, because he mm-hmm. is going to be that first domino that just knocks down the rest of free agency. There's going to be a lot of moving parts that are not, are completely stood still until Juan Soto is signed. If they don't sign him, let's just say by the winter meetings, Lindsay, you have five other teams that are going to lose in this bidding war, that at least out of the six that we've mentioned, there's obviously going to be more. So you're going to have 29 teams, obviously, that lose. Mm-hmm. You're going to have about five contenders that don't make Juan Soto that could miss out on other players that they're not reaching out to and working on right now. And then we're going to head into 2025 and we're going to have some sleeper dark horse candidates who sign these players that that should have went to the Dodgers, should have went to the Yankees to help their rotation or help whatever, but didn't go because they're focused on Soto. So I do think there's going to be a very aggressive push to see Juan Soto get signed by the middle of December. We're going to have an early Christmas present, I think. It's going to happen at the winter meetings because they have to in order to make sure that the rest of their team is ready to go, so other teams can't sign those players. So I do think it's going to be a very aggressive push for them. But when you talk about that Yankees rotation, yeah, they have to make some additions. They have to do something. But it's not going to matter until they sign Juan Soto. They have to do that first.
Yeah. And to kind of recap, you know, the issues there with the Mets rotation, the seven teams that are reported to have already checked in on Juan Soto, the New York Yankees, the New York Mets, Los Angeles Dodgers, the Toronto Blue Jays, they were in on Shohei Ohtani. They hosted him multiple times, both in Toronto and at the spring training complex, the Boston Red Sox, the San Francisco Giants, and the Tampa Bay Rays. And, you know, six of those teams are traditionally larger payroll teams. The Rays are obviously the exception there. So we'll see what happens. It's the thing that I worry about is for any team that does successfully sign Juan Soto, the team that does bring him in, it's hard for me to imagine that they will be the favorites when it comes to signing anybody else, right? Because you're going to have all those other big market teams. Let's say the Mets do it. Then if the Mets and the Dodgers are facing off for a free agent, say a pitcher, right? Let's say it's Corbin Burns. Let's say it's Max Fried, whoever it might be. It feels like the Dodgers are going to have the advantage from a financial perspective because they didn't just commit $600 million. And I would imagine in all of those front offices right now, there are detailed plans about if we get Juan Soto, here is the path we take for the rest of free agency. But if we don't get him, here's how we can use that $44 million a year AAV that we've budgeted, or whatever it might be on this. Here's how we can use that money and quickly pivot and be aggressive at making two or three or four or five ads. And it just feels like that's going to be insurmountable for whatever team that signs Juan Soto to beat from a financial perspective.
On that note, would you say that there are plenty of paths for other teams to be named the winner, the overall winner of free agency, even if they don't sign Juan Soto?
I think if a team that tries and fails to get Juan Soto turns around and uses that $44 million to get fill two or three other holes, especially if those are the only holes they have remaining on the roster, I think you can say, yeah, that team is a winner of free agency, or maybe the winner of the offseason. The team that signs Juan Soto is obviously going to also be a winner of free agency just for getting a generational talent. But I do feel like there is a possibility of a team being able to aggressively use that money and fill the rest of their holes. And then saying, yeah, they won free agency because they filled their vacancy at left field. They filled their top of the rotation, their number one starter vacancy. They filled this, they filled that. They took care of all of their needs with the Juan Soto money. I feel like it's possible, but that one team has to essentially go undefeated with all of their signings outside of Juan Soto to do it.
That screams San Francisco Giants to me, Lindsay. How many times this last couple off seasons have we talked about the Giants missing out on the biggest name free agent? But if a guy like Buster Posey in the new front office regime can bring in like a Willy Adames, a big pitcher, and maybe a star outfielder to help them surpass 30 home runs as in a Giants uniform for the first time since Barry Bonds in 2004, and actually compete back in the NL West, I think that you could rule that being one of the winners, if not the winner, of free agency, even if they don't sign Juan Soto.
I see a path for the Giants to be the winner if they can nail all of those things, right? Now, can they sign Willy Adames over Ha-Seong Kim and then turn around and fill a couple other spots? You know, if they use that money budgeted for Juan Soto well, probably. But at the same time, I do think that we talked yesterday about Ha-Seong Kim being a favorite to go to San Francisco because of a lot of the connections there. I do think that's a scenario where if that happens, financial flexibility-wise, you can turn around and do a couple other acquisitions and you can win the offseason. It's going to be fun to kind of look back at this in spring training and say, hey, here's what happened. Here's what we think can be, like, here's who we think won based on what they were able to do. And talking about looking back, there's a couple free agents who have indicated they are open to position changes. If you sign Alex Bregman and move him to second base, or you sign Willy Adames and move him to third base, are we going to look back and say that was an overpay by you to get this player and move them to a less valuable defensive position at the cost that it's going to take to sign those guys this offseason?
Well, we're already saying that conversation about Wilson Contreras, about him potentially moving the first base this offseason, it hasn't even happened yet. So I do think we will wind up saying that. But I do think overall it's a good idea for the market of those players. I mean, saying you're willing to move another position, that opens up way more teams maybe potentially interested in you, somebody who had a third base spot locked in. And then all of a sudden Bregman's like, oh, by the way, I'll play second base. Well, that opens up some more teams saying, well, maybe we bring in Alex Bregman. Same case with Willy Adames. So I do think that's really interesting on the player's behalf. It might cause a certain bidding war, if you will. But overall, I think if they do go ahead and bring in a team, let's say, for example, the Seattle Mariners, if they bring in Alex Bregman and play second base for them, because the Seattle Mariners desperately need a second baseman, I do think they will get one of the top ones before this offseason's over. If it doesn't work out the way it plans, you're going to look back and say, okay, Seattle, that was a bad call. You went and got a third baseman, although he was a division rival and you want to go ahead and stick it to the Astros as much as you possibly can. That was an overpay. I do think we will see that. And we're seeing it with St. Louis right now. And it hasn't even happened yet, but we're already talking about it.
Yeah. And kind of on that note, Wilson Contreras signed for 5 years and $87.5 million in early December of 2022 with the expectation that he was going to replace the somewhat irreplaceable Yadier Molina behind the plate. 2 years after that, obviously, you know, you saw times where they used him at DH only. They didn't really want him to play a lot of catcher. John Mozeliak said on, I think it was Wednesday, that, quote, it was very unlikely, end quote, that Contreras would catch for the team next year. They're going to have him do first base and DH. I understand the loss of Paul Goldschmidt in free agency, right? He is a free agent. Didn't get a qualifying offer. He's expected to move on. This is something where Mozeliak said that catching's a demanding position. The medical team recommended it in terms of if he really wants to extend his career, they think that would be the best for him. And this is something where he has a no trade clause. He doesn't want to leave, so they're putting him at first base. But there's a couple other names that have been rumored to be potentially moving. Nolan Arenado at third base. Sonny Gray, who they signed to a big deal and gave up a draft pick for as a qualifying offer guy last offseason. Miles Mikolas, who has put up plenty of innings but hasn't been necessarily that productive. Closer Ryan Helsley. How many of these guys, because all of them except for Helsley have a no trade clause, how many of these guys do we think actually move this offseason from that list of four or five guys?
All of them. I think all of them go. I think we see Arenado on the taking off. I think Helsley goes. And I'll even add some more. I think because of the fact that you're going to have Wilson Contreras move to first base. You have a logjam there now. You can have Alex Burleson in the outfield if you want, or maybe play DH, sure. But then you have a guy like Lucan Baker, who's been trying his hardest to make it to the major league roster. When he gets up there, he's known for some power. He's been great in AAA with power. So if somebody feels like they can unlock that at the major league level, I think he'll get traded as well. I think there's going to be a lot of pieces moved for St. Louis this year. It's not going to be the same St. Louis Cardinals that you've seen in the past. But what we have seen in the past is they are afraid to rebuild. They only retool. And I know that there's a big difference when you look at rebuilding and retooling. I think this is finally the year in what seems to be a lame duck year at general management between John Mozeliak and moving over to the new regime. I do think that we are going to see more of a rebuild from St. Louis to focus on the future of this ball club. And we're going to see a lot of those young guys really, you know, get a chance and opportunity to do so. I think they would love to be able to trade Miles Mikolas. I just don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to wind up being a DFA candidate.
Right. Given some of the money involved for some of those guys, Nolan Arenado owed $74 million over the next 3 years. Sonny Gray owed $65 million over the next two, because that contract was amazingly backloaded, and the presence of the no trade clauses. Do the Cardinals have a chance of getting a meaningful return for these guys? Or is this going to be, maybe we'll get one lottery pick young prospect and we're really just trying to dump the money on somebody else?
Yeah, I think there's a way better chance for them to get a decent trade value from Sonny Gray, because although he didn't have the best season last year, just 2 years ago, he's just a year removed from being the runner up from the AL Cy Young, which Garrett Cole won in 2023. He can still play. He still has ace potential. I guarantee whoever trades for him doesn't need him to be an ace, probably a two or three starter. So I think there's a good value for Sonny Gray. But when you look at Nolan Arenado, I mean, look, when the Cardinals got him, they didn't even have to trade a lot for him. So I do think that when he gets moved, it'll be, you know, mainly for a salary dump to get his salary away. And you're probably going to get a couple low-level starters or low-level prospects in return. But I do think out of the two, I think Sonny Gray is definitely the better chance of that for Cardinals.
Something to watch for Arenado. I'm just going to put it out in the universe now. He's from Southern California. So whenever that happens, you got to think Los Angeles Dodgers. Is this something where they move Max Muncy back to second base? Just try to work out something else in place of having Gavin Lux. Maybe it's Mookie playing some short, some second. But do they look at adding Arenado to cover third base? And can you imagine that lineup if they added Nolan Arenado and potentially fix him back to what they've had for everything else? So just a lot of options here, a lot of moving parts.
He used to be in the NL West, and he used to be in the NL West, and he used to, I mean, teams used to hate playing against that Colorado's Rockies team. Can you believe I actually just said that? Teams used to actually hate playing against the Colorado Rockies when you had a guy like Nolan Arenado there. So imagine him in the Dodgers. I mean, insane. And just, you talk about any star and then just say, imagine him with the Dodgers, with the roster they already have. It feels like it's already a cheat code that they have it. Now they're just adding the Game Shark to the Game Boy, Lindsay, this offseason. And they're going to add those extra little pieces. I think it's just going to be absolutely wild what they decide to do. If they don't get Juan Soto, but they still get a couple pieces, it's hard for them. It's hard for me not to think right now that they will not be returning to the World Series. It's wild the way the roster's set up. Sure, they have a couple questions with their pitching, but there is how can you not like this Dodgers team? How can you not like it?
Something else for me to kind of throw out there for folks to think about: Philly. Something where, do you do an Arenado for Alec Boehm, almost straight up trade here? Philly loves to do scrubs and stars for their thing. They have a bunch of big name players. And then they have some, you know, they have some cheap arbitration, you know, pre-arbitration guys. And is Boehm worth what he's going to make when he gets to arbitration? I don't know. But they do have money coming off the books with JT Realmuto soon, you know, some other guys that are potentially wrapping up in the next season or two. Castellanos, I think, after next year. Could they afford the Arenado money for a couple seasons as they try to push to move on in the postseason? We'll see what happens. That'll be interesting.
That would go right back to the Cardinals being in that retooling mode, not rebuilding mode, because you're not picking up someone that is on the fringe of MLB, you kind of already know what you get from him, and you're going to have to pay him eventually, you know, a lot sooner than later. Mm-hmm. I don't like that idea, but that wouldn't shock me one bit if the Cardinals went out and did something like that.
Yeah, and there's been some Michael Kay, announcer for the Yankees, on his ESPN radio show said that he thinks Arenado would be a good fit for the New York Yankees as opposed to spending free agent money on Pete Alonso. And this is something the Yankees, obviously they want to bring back Juan Soto, but supposedly they have already checked in as a backup plan on both Pete Alonso and Anthony Santander to give them another outfield bat in place of Juan Soto. And then they've also expressed interest in a lot of the top pitchers, Corbin Burns, Blake Snell, Max Fried. They have a lot of questions about their bullpen. Obviously, Clay Holmes is a free agent, Jonathan Loaisiga, Tommy Canley, Tim Hill. They're bringing back Luke Weaver at almost nothing for 25, but they have a lot of open innings in the bullpen. And then if they sign a frontline starter like a Burns or a Snell or a Fried, they could obviously kick somebody in the rotation back to the bullpen to help cover some of those innings. This is a team that feels like they have the potential, if they don't sign Juan Soto, to go out there and fill a few different holes, like we talked about, to be a winner of free agency. What do you think is better, having Juan Soto if you're the Yankees, or let's say if you don't have Juan Soto, being able to sign a first baseman? Let's say you sign Pete Alonso and you sign Santander for left field, and then you're able to move Jazz to center field and you find a second or third baseman. What's a better outcome for the Yankees? Sign a starter, Alonso, Santander, or sign Juan Soto back?
I don't think Yankees fans are going to like this, but if you could sign Pete Alonso, who absolutely slugs, and then you have Aaron Judge next to him as well, you're talking about two potential 50 home run guys back to back next to each other. And then you go ahead and get Anthony Santander, who had the best season of his career with 44 home runs last mm-hmm. year. I mean, how can you not think that's not going to be in the ballpark of Yankee Stadium? How can you not think that's a good addition or a good add? I think in the short term, that would be the better roster. And because that would also leave you room to continue to go out and get more pitching and build up that way. I think in the short term, that would be good. Long term, I think they might regret that if they missed out on a guy like Juan Soto. But mm-hmm. if you're looking to win the World Series, which Yankees have not done for a very long time, at least in the eyes of their franchise, I think that you have to really consider doing something like not going for Juan Soto and filling the pieces like you mentioned. If I had the sticks, that's the route I'm taking.
Yeah, this is the Yankees had the worst first base production in baseball, right? It feels like financially, if they go up to what they have to do to bring back Juan Soto, just based on the fact that they've not had these stupid payrolls that everybody is used to from the early 2000s, it feels like they're not going to be able to fill the rest of this holes. We saw this in the World Series. They're not a good base running team. They're not good defensively. And they don't really have the lineup depth outside of Judge and Soto. And so I'm not going to say having Soto is a luxury, right? Because he is a very, very good. He's one of the best hitters in baseball. He's a generational talent. And he's, as of now, on track for the Hall of Fame. But signing him over filling all of these other holes is a luxury that I don't necessarily think the Yankees can afford. And so I think I'm going to go on a limb and I'm going to say if the Yankees sign Juan Soto to whatever deal is required to get Juan Soto, I'm going to go on a limb and say I don't think they win a World Series in his tenure in New York simply because of the money involved to sign him and the fact that they do not have a complete enough roster around him to do all the things you have to do to win a World Series. And I think this World Series showed us because, yes, those two guys, Judge and Soto, could slug, although Judge didn't do a whole lot this postseason. You had guys who stepped up to replace him like Stanton and things like that, but they don't do anything else well. And signing Juan Soto to a free agent deal only exacerbates that same problem. So that's kind of where I am with it. We'll see what happens. I don't think signing Juan Soto for most teams is actually a smart decision from a roster building standpoint, unless you are a mostly complete roster and he is that piece that pushes you over the top. And I just don't think for the Yankees, they're a complete enough roster to be in that situation.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. If you look at the players who really stepped up in the World Series and the postseason for the Yankees, Stanton's not getting any younger, that's for sure. And
not getting any healthier.
That's also true. And Gleyber Torres probably not going to be back with the Yankees as well. You got to hope
if you sign Soto.
You got to hope that you'll eventually get some sort of postseason production out of Aaron Judge over his career. You got to assume that's going to happen at some point in time. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's a lot of missing pieces for the Yankees to fill. And we talk about how they have this blank checkbook, but they haven't seemed to really do that in the past with teams. I think that's more of just a narrative more than an actual reality as of late, Lindsay. So if they go out and get Juan Soto, let's not think that they're going to go out and also get the top pitcher and the top outfielder as well. It's not going to happen. They're going to probably get Juan Soto and then start filling the pieces with some, dare I say, lower level free agents. Like, that's what's going to happen in that case. And I don't think you're far off if that happens, where they might not get back to the World Series. I don't think they get back next year, but saying in his entire tenure, that to me, that might be a stretch, but
it probably is. But at the same time, if you're paying him 45 or 50 million bucks a year, it's just hard to imagine that they'll be able to afford the payroll around him. Although granted, anything can happen in a decade, right? But
yeah.
All right, kind of wrapping up here real quick. A little bit of bringing back a minor league talk here. MLB Pipeline put out an article about the rookies, the current prospects that they think have the best chance to compete for a Gold Glove in 2025. Because we saw one rookie this year, Willy Abreu of the Red Sox, right fielder, won the Gold Glove there. Three other rookies were nominated, or I guess were finalists. Jacob Young of the Nationals, Mason Winn of the Cardinals, and Brian Rocchio of the Guardians. Of these five current prospects, who do you think is most likely to win a Gold Glove in 2025? Outfielder Dylan Cruz of the Washington Nationals, shortstop Jordan Lawler of the Arizona Diamondbacks, outfielder Jacob Melton of the Astros, catcher Drew Romo of the Rockies, and utility man Luis Angel Acuña of the Mets. Which of those five guys are most likely to win a Gold Glove in 2025?
The first two names that pop out to me right away is Romo and Cruz, just because I think they're going to get the most opportunity to do so, to, from the beginning of opening day, probably to the end. But I'm going to lean toward Dylan Cruz here. I think that outfield in Washington is very exciting. I think that there's a lot of really fun pieces that the Nationals are going to be able to build up. And we've already seen them do that so far in the last couple seasons. I think they're doing the rebuild quite nicely. When you put James Wood in there as well, Dylan Cruz, I think he's going to have a really prime opportunity to play every day in that Nationals outfield. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be next to one of the best outfielders in baseball, and Jacob Young as well. So I think him having that portion, taken care of, it's going to help his catch probability a little bit more. It's going to help all those all those statistics as well. So give me Dylan Cruz from the Nationals.
I do think the key for Dylan Cruz is to stay in right field. There's some discussion about if the Nationals go out and sign a slugging corner outfielder, that they'll have to move Cruz to center so that they're not benching James Wood, and that Young would be the odd man out. I do think if that happens, there's no way Cruz is beating a Britton Doyle or a Pete Crow Armstrong or guys like that. But if he can stay in right field, right, you add a guy that's going to be a left field DH guy to share time with James Wood, I think then, long as Dylan Cruz is in right, I think that's a good one. I also think shortstop Jordan Lawler has the speed. Like, he's probably 70 grade speed. His arm is good enough. It's not amazing, but it's good enough. And I don't know if he would be able to do it at shortstop. Gerardo Perdomo's defense is okay at short, but they've been happy with him so far. I wonder if he's been playing some third base in the Dominican Winter League. I wonder if Jordan Lawler at third base, since the National League, Nolan Arenado, his reign has ended. it feels like he has what it takes to be a gold glover at third base. I kind of want to push back a little bit on Drew Romo. Watching him a little bit, I feel like, one, he was yipped up a little bit. He was having some trouble with some of the throws. But also, catcher Patrick Bailey is such a great catcher for the Giants that in the National League, it feels like it's just going to be really hard for any catcher to surpass some of the great backstops we have right now in the National League. I think Sean Murphy is due for a rebound next year, and he'd be in that conversation as well. But I think third base is a little more wide open. So I do think that I like the idea of Jordan Lawler having a chance there at if he plays third base. If he's at shortstop, I just think you rarely see a rookie shortstop who's not just a generational defender able to do it. Either way, it doesn't really once Carson Williams of the Tampa Bay Rays finally makes it up, which I'm guessing 26, he'll be the shoe-in. He's the best defender I've ever seen at shortstop outside of like Andrelton Simmons and Ozzie Smith. Like he's that level. So whenever he finally gets up, but he's not on the list because he's probably not going to break with the team in 2025. This has been First Pitch for Friday, November 8th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell. Also leave us a 5-star review. Helps folks discover the show. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.